Time for another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller, and today we welcome Jim Nienhuis, UW-Madison Professor of Horticulture, a Vicar of Vegetable, gardening haiku poet, one of our guests today. Jim, great to see you.
Oh, bless you. Thank you very much, Mike.
And Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator and Director of Education at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville.
Morning.
Nice to see you as well, Mike. Yeah. Great to have you both here. And you can join in with your gardening questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And I've got to tell you, tomatoes are kind of on my mind because my wife found one of these upside-down tomato planters.
Oh, what are those called? The
topsy-turvy.
Oh, yeah, the topsy-turvy. You know, the thing I like about that is that it's so much more efficient, right? Because the water runs downhill.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense to you, Michael?
I actually, for someone, planted two of those this past weekend and was wondering how effective these things are. They look neat, but when they're watering, they're going down.
It just doesn't make any sense, does it? I mean, does every other plant that has the leaves pointing up, you know, dry up?
You know, I actually felt very uncomfortable for the plant seeing it hang there upside down like that.
Well, we're going to try it because some friends tried it last year.
But, you know, the beautiful thing about this is you get the offer is not one, but two. And you've noticed that in addition, you get five steak knives and a Propeel pocket fisherman. I think that combination alone
laugh now, but this fall when I'm harvesting thousands of cherry tomatoes and having a night, I was looking forward to doing it because it was quite attractive. It looked really nice, and frankly, that's what it's more like a conversation piece.
Don't you have visions of the plant just falling down on the deck, ripping out because the water, after all, runs downhill, Michael.
That was my fear when I hung these up, so I made sure I got some pretty heavy gauge chain and a nice big eye bolt to bolt into the rafter. I was very conscious of the weight of the water.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing. I'll be giving little updates as to the topsy turvy progress as the summer goes along.
Can I get the Propeel Pocket Fisherman? At least
never
part
had
of
one
this.
Of those. Did what's your favorite tomato variety? By the way, what do you like, Jim?
Oh, well, I have that. There's a.
Now I'm talking eating.
Well, eating.
Well, I'm talking slicing.
Okay. You've got to remember that I worked many years for the tomato processing industry in California. And so I'm all about, there must be a little Italian in me because I am definitely a sauce guy, right? I'm a sauce guy. And for me, tomatoes are all about viscosity, right? The ability. In fact, when I moved to Madison, Wisconsin 20 years ago, one of the frightening things for me was I went to the farmer's market, bought a bushel basket of tomatoes, and then boiled it for over the next 4 or 5 days, trying to concentrate it down. I was used to having tomatoes that had a higher, soluble solids and viscosity content, so that it would boil down pretty quickly. Mm. So I wrote to my old employers at H.J. Heinz and got some high viscosity tomatoes, and I bred them to be early. And so my favorite tomato is my own. It's cleverly named 1x10. In fact, there are 88, count them, 88 listeners to Wisconsin Public Radio who wrote to me after these shows and requested seed, and most of them are happy. A couple sent back some. Some people actually drew pictures of, the Rolex. Most of them were happy. A few said, hey, they never germinated or, you're a little chintzy on the seed. But most people seem happy. And a lot of people are growing 1x10. And then, of course, they're also growing. I also sent them the complimentary. This is just like the Propeel Pocket Fisherman and the steak knives. The same offer. I sent them the roasting pepper, Mike. So, and you had that last year. Right?
No, you never sent them to me.
No. But didn't you eat them? I went to the Rotary Gardens.
I was too busy moving chairs around, so I didn't have the chance to go eat their peppers. Oh. But everybody else did.
Okay. And we that one has a little bit better name, as everyone knows. Even Jim Packard knows the name of this pepper. It is known as the Wisconsin Wosta. Because it is, after all, for Woesten.
Makes sense to me, I think. But I tell you what, we have callers online. Oop. You have a question for us, give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. By the way, what's going on at the Rotary Gardens in Janesville these days, Mike?
From the grounds point of view, Mark Dwyer, director of horticulture, is busy getting plants in the ground. We have all our annuals that are supposed to be going in this weekend. So if you have some time on Saturday and want to come down and volunteer, I know we could use your help. But there is quite a bit going on. One of the big things this year that I'm really impressed with is the new signage that we had put in the garden. I think we had about 18 or 20 new garden descriptor signs placed throughout, and it really just helps with the interpretation of the gardens. Yeah. And they're just beautiful signs, very easy to read, but really just helps people with their experience.
Well, that's good to hear. And what's your website again? It's
which one? The Rotary Gardens one?
Rotary Gardens one. What's the website for that one?
www.rotarygardens.org.
Gardens with an S, too.
With an S, yes.
Yeah, .org. Okay. Go to that. It's a nice website. Take a look at it as you listen in.
Thank you. I'm the webmaster.
Karen and Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Karen. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have some flowers in containers, and I'm having a lot of trouble with chipmunks. And I threw in some mothballs to keep them out. But then I happened to realize if I'm watering my plants, isn't that going to poison the soil? Do you have any recommendations, or have you heard of this mothball solution?
It's not a good solution. Not a good solution.
The lead solution is a good one.
Yes. The hand motions being made by my colleague right now is that of a gun. Let's just put it that way. I refer to that as acute lead poisoning. I've heard that term used, but let's not go there right away. When you're dealing with animals in your landscape, chipmunks or anything for that matter, you're going to need to go through a variety of things. They're going to get used to one thing pretty quick, like the mothball smell. They'll say, okay, this really isn't a threat. They'll get back in there. So if you've heard of them using mothballs, using soap, using human hair, all that, you should rotate through there so it's constantly being fresh and scary for them. And again, Dr. Nienhuis is making the gun motion.
I've got an idea.
You've got to deal with these problems.
I've got an idea.
Don't pussyfoot around.
That has worked pretty well, and that is over the top of the pot.
Yes.
You put a screen, not really a screen, but a large hole.
A hardware cloth or something like that?
Hardware cloth, but with larger holes.
Chicken wire.
Yeah, like a chicken wire. Mm-hmm. Because they can't really crawl through that.
Right. So,
and you can put that down, and you can put it around the plants. Or the plants, so sometimes you've got them in already, but they will grow through that wire. Mm-hmm. Plants will. But if you don't, if you already have the plants in, you could do a little cutting around, and I'll tell you what, you put that on top of the pot, they don't go in.
And you might also want to consider a couple plastic snakes, maybe a fake owl in your area of your garden. That might help scare some things away.
But that chicken wire.
Well, yeah, maybe the combination of something stinky, something to scare them, and then something to
That's not really a barrier. It's just hard for them to.
Yeah, you want something stinky and smelly and kind of ugly? My brother-in-law is probably available. You know, I could rent him out. You know, he's kind of unemployed now. You know?
Well, I could leave my cats loose, and they take care of them pretty easily.
How about capsaicin?
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
Would that work, Michael? Do you think capsaicin would
work? They just dig around. They don't really eat.
It's not like the squirrels. Not like the tree rats.
Huh? Yeah, they if they're putting the dirt in their mouth, I'm sure it's will help. But with all animal control, the only 100% thing is, again,
my brother
lethal. Well, yeah. I wasn't going to go with that. But there's a lot of options to choose.
Scott in Duluth, Minnesota. We're on to you now. Hi, Scott.
Hi. Hello. This year, we mulched our garden with straw, and now we're starting to grow a lot of straw.
Yeah.
Do we need to get rid of that, or is it something to worry about, or is it going to take over?
Okay, so you used the straw last fall.
No, actually, just this year to, you know, keep weeds down, and now we're growing straw.
Yeah, you're growing weeds. And
yeah, that straw has become a weed for you, so I would just pull it as it comes up if you can, or just lightly hoe it. Take your sharp garden hoe and just scrape it at the surface and break it. And in the future, just try to make sure you find a cleaner source of straw so you're not going to be bringing in all these seeds that you are.
Okay. Can I ask one more quick question?
Sure.
We also have we built a raised bed this year and put like a hoop greenhouse over it. What's the ideal temperature to keep that at during the day?
What are you growing?
It's basil, tomatoes, peppers.
Boy, I would say that, you know, those hoop houses are good for season extension. You know, those are not really designed to be used throughout the summer. It's going to get way, way too hot in there. So I would say use it early and use it perhaps very late, but not during the season at all.
Good points.
In fact, but you know, you could seal it up. You could grow that winter spinach. Think of that.
Ooh.
Oh, that's like my fantasy.
We do live in Duluth where it hasn't been above 70 yet, so...
Okay, you may want to leave it year-round then. Yeah, that's a possibility.
Especially for those warm season plants that you have in there now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. Dan in Woodman, we're on to you now. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I've got a question about organic controls for ants that have been girdling my tomato seedlings. And I've tried making a hot pepper spray, and that seems to work a little bit. And the other thing that I had read about on the internet was sprinkling granulated molasses on the ground. And I just tried that yesterday, and it hasn't seemed to do anything yet, of course. But I was wondering if you had any comments or any other ideas.
Michael, I do not.
That sounds like one for Phil Pelletieri.
I don't know how to control your ants. I'm sorry to hear that they're girdling your tomato plants. Maybe they'll just go away magically. You know, prayer often works, you know. Prayer and patience.
Yeah, that's the first time I've had that question before. It probably require a little thought. I'm sure you're saying organically to control it. Off the top of my head, I can't think of any products. I can think of a lot of ways to kill ants, but if you ask for organic right now...
Maybe like a sugar trail over to a cliff, and they could fall off, you know, like
lemmings.
Yeah, like the lemmings falling off the cliff. You know, wouldn't that be? You could find a little pile of ants down there, little legs.
Yeah. If you have ant hills, I mean, of course, if you've got a large ant hill or something like that, you can dig down into the center of the hill and maybe try some boiling water down it.
Or just flushing it regularly with a good solid watering.
Well, in all the years I've gardened, I've never had a problem with ants. I mean, and
sure, it's the ants? You sure it's the ants?
Andy. Yep.
They're not leaf cutter. I mean, they're not from tropical Central America, right? They're not leaf cutters. That's been a problem, but I've never had troubles with ants. You, Michael? I've never had that problem.
No, in our garden, ants have not been the problem.
Oh. Maybe somebody else has some ideas too, Dan. Stay listening.
All right.
Or a recipe, you know, one of the two.
Or a haiku.
A haiku. Ants in my garden. Ants in my... Yeah, that works.
Rosemary in Barron, Wisconsin. Hello.
Good morning. I have a question for Mike. For years, I've started my own seedlings and used just a plain old fluorescent light, and it worked fantastic. A couple of years ago at an auction, I bought one of these fancy plant stands that you can start seedlings at.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's because the fluorescent light has kind of a shield on it, but I'm having trouble with my plants. They turn sort of not brown and dry up immediately, but they turn kind of cream-colored and then eventually dry up and die. And I'm wondering, is it getting too hot under this different light for them?
From what you described, with that reflecting shield, maybe it is getting too warm. Normally, we like to tell you to keep your lights really low in proximity to the plants. Maybe you should try raising it up to give it a little distance so they don't bake as much. That could be a good possibility.
Okay. Right. And then, could I have one more quick question?
Sure.
Oh, my Chinese lanterns, for years now, I have not received any flowers in the fall because something's eating them.
The ants.
Ants?
No.
I'm sorry.
No. What could I put on there to stop whatever is eating them?
We got to figure out what's chewing them up first before we can give any recommendation like that. Maybe just vigilance, hanging over them with a bottle of water to spray at them as soon as something shows up. But we need to determine what's chewing them up before I can tell you what to do about it.
Okay. Is the Chinese lantern, is that a Phacelus? Is that the same genus as the tomatillo?
If maybe we're thinking of, if her Chinese lantern is the same Chinese lantern I'm thinking of, there would be some similarities to it.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. There you go, Rosemary. Thank you very much for calling. And email. Oh, we've got a haiku. We'll give that.
Oh,
in just
wonderful.
We'll give that in just a minute. Mike Maddox and Jim Nienhuis, our guest today on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Jim Packard answering the phones today. Thanks, as always, to Jim. Jim Nienhuis, professor of horticulture, vicar of vegetables, gardening haiku poet, one of our guests, the other Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension horticulture educator and director of education at Rotary Botanical Gardens. And it's Garden Talk, and here we come with a haiku from Banker Joe.
Oh, boy.
He's a banker, but he has he writes a nice haiku, and here it is. Rain soft on the fields, then the sun, the garden grows. Oh, my mouth waters.
Oh.
Isn't that good?
Wow, from a banker. Why are we shocked by that?
Rain soft on the fields.
On the fields.
Then the sun, the garden grows. Oh, my mouth waters.
Oh. Well done. I actually wrote one. Let's see. I wrote one. I'm going to challenge my guest here today to write a Rotary Garden haiku. And you can do this, you know, spontaneously as I'm reading you mine. Mine is cotyledons as large as cow tongues, ripening in the sun, sleek sailing squash. I don't see anyone in this room writing that one down, whereas Banker Joe, I think we were, I saw your pencil moving rapidly, but I guess the cotyledons as big, I guess, you know, see, the essence of the haiku is to capture a mental image in the first five, you know, phrases, right? And I apparently the vision of the cotyledon as large as a cow's tongue is not captured. A positive gardening image from anyone in this audience, although Jim Packard apparently likes it.
Well, let's go to Susan in Green Bay and find out what's on Susan's mind. Susan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Just a quick one for a former caller who is having a problem with chipmunks.
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, don't ever poison. That's just my advice. But anyway... tell her to just go over to Fleet Farm, pick up an inexpensive have-a-heart trap, a small one, a Tostitos scoops. You know what those are?
Mm-hmm.
The snack food and a little bit of peanut butter and birdseed on top, and they're very easy to catch. Sneak them over to your local park and just let them go. And I caught at least half a dozen last summer that way. It's very easy and a very simple solution. The only thing is you have to keep doing it. So anyway, I'll take it off the air.
All right.
And that is an option too. I prefer using some of the deterrents like what we talked about, because one of the things that the animal wildlife specialists have found that when we do relocate them and we move them to an unfamiliar territory, they are more prone to predation by natural predators.
Oh,
so
lovely.
It still sometimes becomes a lethal.
You're killing them anyway.
But you've just removed the guilt from it, I hate to say. That's why I try to go with the predators and just scare them away. But that does work. Trapping is an option.
Bill in Middleton, on to you. Hi, Bill.
Hello. What was suggested to me about the we were having problems with squirrels and chipmunks and rabbits. And we went down to Farm and Fleet, and we got a little vial of fox urine.
Yeah,
it's what hunters use to mask their scent.
Yeah,
you know, it's nasty smelling stuff. It comes in a little tiny bottle. It's about $5. You just sort of sprinkle it around the garden area, and it smells like predator. Yeah. You know, it smells like, I mean, that's a fox is one of their natural predators. And it keeps them away. It really worked. I mean, it worked. Mm-hmm. We had to redo it every 3 weeks or so. But we no longer, I mean, it's been a couple of years since we've been using this, and we have not had problems with those creatures since then.
How often do you apply it?
About every 2 or 3 weeks.
Because you'd have to be.
It stays around. It's even through good rain, it'll stay around.
Yeah.
That smell. And it's pretty, like I say, it's pretty nasty, and you don't have to, you know, a little bit goes a lot, a long way. You don't have to use very much. You just go around the perimeter of the garden.
Yeah, there's any number of predatory urines you can get either from the garden centers or at your local hunting supply store. Coyote urine, I remember from my deer hunting days, was mm-hmm. always used for us. But yeah, you're right. You do need a reply, especially after a good heavy rain.
And as for insects, I've never had a particular problem with ants, but they say that marigolds emit a scent that masks the reproductive pheromones of many insects. And so that deters, we plant marigolds around the outside of our garden, too. And they're those orange flowers.
Yeah.
And that seems to, you know, we haven't had much problem with insects either since we started doing that.
Hmm. Well, marigolds flower forever.
Yeah. And one of the other things I think that when you do that kind of companion planting in the garden, yeah, there's always the possibility of that kind of chemical interruption or what he described, but also too is it gives place for predatory insects to hide that would be feeding on your pests. So by mixing up a lot of flowers into your vegetable garden, you're given a place for some of the beneficials to hang out and do their job.
Thanks a lot for calling, Bill. Appreciate it. We've got an email from Jane, who is a North Central Wisconsin master gardener. She says, having some trouble with something creating holes in the leaves for the past 2 years on my turnip greens and my green beans. She actually sent a picture, which, of course, our vicars are looking at and Jim and Mike are looking at, but you folks can't see. Do you guys have any idea as to what might be creating those holes, what insect?
I agree. My colleague already wrote down the answer, and I fully agree with him. That is certainly a flea beetle damage, and it looks like what do you got here? A rapini? What kind of are these radishes?
She says turnip greens and green beans.
Absolutely, that's exactly what you've got.
So flea beetles.
So how to control that? Well, organically or inorganically?
Well, at our community garden, we're trying to use floating row covers to keep these things covered to keep the flea beetle off. I think we're having a little bit of mixed result with that because we put them on a little too late.
And they were already in the ground. Flea beetles are small. So all you're doing is actually providing a wonderful floating row cover to protect the flea beetles as they consume your brassicas.
And it's looking like it, too.
So chemically?
I would guess that, you know, any of those pyrethroids or something like that, you know, that you might be able to get would be organic and fairly safe. Mm-hmm. I think those might work. What about, is rotenone, is that an organic product?
Yes, it is.
Okay, that would work as well, I would guess.
Okay.
They don't eat a lot, though, really. I mean, actually, think of it. They make kind of an attractive, you can call it holy. You can think of it as a kind of a spiritual
cheese.
Kind of a vegetable.
Swiss cheese.
I mean, they don't look like they consume the whole leaf. I would have to say that's fairly attractive.
Well.
Okay.
Each to his own. Gabrielle emailed and said, I had planned to save some tomato seeds from my First Lady, which is a hybrid tomato plant, but I forgot. My aunt also had one of my First Ladies as well as many other varieties of tomatoes growing last year. She saved some First Lady seeds for me, which I started. What are the chances they will be First Lady tomatoes? Not very good, are they?
No, that's a kind of a zero probability. I would say that, you know, what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to do what I have done, you know, for the last 8 or 10 years. My favorite tomato, I mean, the most delicious tomato that I've ever eaten was a variety called Shasta. And, of course, I grew this in California, very early maturing variety. It was used by Campbell's Soup Company. And I ran out of my F1 hybrid seeds, right? And they didn't have any more.
Oh.
So for the next 8 years, I had to do a process of what is referred to as pedigree selection. I had to choose, I had to select out the inbred lines that constituted the parents of that. So it's a very, very tedious process of plant breeding and selection, and requires hundreds of tomato plants to do it. So saving it is not going to recover First Lady itself. You're going to get what they call the F2 generation, which is going to be a segregating generation. On the other hand, getting involved in tomato breeding, even on a small scale, if you were to grow out even 10 or 12 plants, I mean, it's an exciting kind of a thing. It's fun. And I think a lot of gardeners, it strikes me that many gardeners sort of view the varietal development process as kind of a black box. But one of the things I'd like to break is the thought that it requires, much skill or knowledge. Lord knows I can do it. That pretty much defines it, right? As doable.
You said it, not me.
Get involved in the breeding process. I would say that's what I would do.
All right, there you have it. And we have another haiku for Garden Talk.
Oh, wonderful.
And this is...
Does this have anything to do with tongues and cotyledons? No.
This is Banker Joe.
Wow.
Oh, no, from Banker Joe's daughter, Sarah. Oh, Banker Joe's daughter, Sarah. And this one has to do with ants. And it's ants in my garden. Catch them, dip them in chocolate. Yum, yum. No more ants.
Sarah is definitely a gardener after my own heart. This is my approach to pest problems. If you can't, shoot them or step on them, eat them, really.
And Barb says, fill a spray bottle with 3 parts soap and 1 part water. Spray the ants and they'll be dead on contact. That's true as well, and that's
be careful not to get that on your plant, just in case of interaction of the soap with the plant can cause some problems.
Straws, garden mulch. Here's another one, Sandy from Marshfield. She said an earlier caller asked about straw as a garden mulch. She said it introduced weed seeds, which now have to be dealt with. I was thinking of using straw for my garden, but now I don't think it would be a good idea. How do the guests recommend? Or what do the guests recommend as a good garden mulch?
Oh, I'm a leaf mulch guy all the way. I really, it's fairly clean. I don't get a lot of weed seeds involved, and leaf mulch, especially if it's 2 years old, is I'm a fanatic for this stuff.
Yeah, it really is.
I pile it on like 10, 12 feet deep.
Actually, I do like using straw when it's available. You just have to make sure it's clean of the weed seeds, and every now and then you do get a bum batch like what the caller had. We use wood chips very carefully in our community garden just because the price is right. We get them for free. But we have to watch kind of the nitrogen issue because they tend to suck it up out of the ground. You can try some local composting places if they're available to you and see what they have to use. That would be ideal if you can get some
local
compost made, especially done professionally, so it was composted correctly. Depending on where you're at, your resources will change, so it's kind of hard to be very specific.
And Jim and Hayward wonders if you know how much they pay the guy who collects the fox urine.
Well, that I was going to say, what? No one came back and said, how much does your brother-in-law actually charge? Because you're looking for something that has an incredible smell. Right, is ugly. I think he fits the bill completely.
Rose in Menominee, your turn. Hi, Rose. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. I have a peony bush that is doing beautifully, has lots of buds on it, looks healthy, but there's something very sticky on the buds and the leaves, and it doesn't... At the garden store, they said... Maybe they didn't know what it was. They said maybe it could be scale, but it doesn't seem like scale to me. But you know what that is?
Well, I know what scale is, but
yeah. The buds are. I mean, the buds are covered with sort of a sugary substance. I don't know if that is a secondary product of the. Now there's a plant that does get covered with ants, and it could very well be that the ants are. That may be an association with the ants itself. On the outside of the bud, it doesn't make any sense to me that those are not nectaries. Right? Yeah. Those are, that's probably due to the actual ants themselves. But I don't think the ants cause any damage. And I think that little sugary substance is probably attracting them. I think you should just sit back and relax.
Yeah. You were right thinking possibly of scale or aphids, because when you do find sticky substances on the plant, that's usually related to honeydew that's being excreted from aphids and scale. But I don't know if that's what you have or not. I think you might want to take that plant into your local extension office and have your county educator or master gardener give it a quick look over for scale or aphids to rule those out. Otherwise, I don't think I'd be too worried about it.
I've never seen scale or aphids on peonies in my garden in Madison.
I haven't seen them on mine either, so that's why I said let's just be on the safe side and have it looked over. It could
What would I take in? I can't dig up the whole plant.
No. Just take a piece.
I would be just like doing like you're doing a bouquet. Just take a cutting of one of the flower stems in, leaves and all, and have it looked at. Yeah, you'll be sacrificing one of your blooms, but just to rest assured, you know.
The bloom, and thank you very much for calling. The peony blooms are a little bit late. Ours are finally coming through, but usually they bloom, and then a big windstorm comes along and
knocks all the petals off, yeah.
Knocks all the petals off.
I don't know if they're late or not. I haven't had a chance
to... They're later in our little microclimate.
I haven't had a chance to look at degree days this week to compare them to the previous year, so I don't know where we're at.
Nancy says we have a 5-year-old Newport plum that we and our birds love. Approximately half of it appears to be dying. While it appeared that the entire tree bloomed in spring, now we're wondering if it has winter kill. There's no evidence of insects or rodents that have harmed it. The attached photos show quite a large crack in the crotch of the branch that delineates the healthy from the not so healthy part of the tree. And the large crack, I don't know. It's hard to tell with that.
I think that's a really clear JPEG image of what exactly is this, Michael? I don't know. Thank you for sending the photograph, though. You're right. There is a large crack there.
But let's,
you know, my advice, of course, is to get out the chainsaw, cut it down, and plant vegetables.
Well, without that...
Okay.
Without that piece of advice, what else is... if it appears to be dying, half of the tree appears to be dying.
Yeah, and...
Could have been a winter damage on the wind side.
It could be a lot of things that, in the scope of the program here, we probably can't delve into and kind of pick apart. If you could send us, or if you want to send it to me, or maybe somebody can forward it on to me, some of these pictures, and we look at the whole tree and maybe be able to do an exchange back and forth to get some more information, we might be able to figure out what's going on.
What's your email address?
firstname.lastname. So mike.maddox, M-A-D-D-O-X, at CES.UWEX.EDU. And I did notice it's on the website.
Yeah, it's on WPR. Our website. Yeah, it's on our WPR website. So
is she far away? Is there any chance that someone could drive over?
No, she's in Menominee Falls. So
I'm not going to be over there anytime soon. Okay. I would say for something like this, just forward me the email. We'll have an exchange that way. Let me look at some pictures and I can get more information. Maybe we can come up with an answer.
All right. Let's go to Pat in La Crosse. Pat, hello to you.
I want to thank you, first of all, for every state or every item you have on.
Oh, thank you.
But I have a little red bug. It's about the size of a pinpoint. When I take a magnifying glass to it, it looks like a little baby crab.
Oh, it looks like a little crab. And where is it?
Yes, sir.
What do you have it on?
Pardon?
What plant is it on?
It's just in the soil.
Oh, just in the soil.
Yep. But they're bright, bright red. And as soon as you take some dirt, you see them because they're so bright. I don't know if they're eating anything. I don't know. I'm not getting rid of them.
They're just there, and you're aware of them, and you want to know what they are. I have to say, based on this is a Phil Pelletieri question. Mm-hmm. Without a picture or a plant to know what they're on, I would say let's give this one to Phil.
Do you have access to the computer?
Yes, I do, sir.
Go to the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab.
Okay.
And there's Phil Pelletieri answers questions there, and he may well have. And they also that website has thousands of pictures of insects too that you could that you can kind of search, and you might just be able to find it on your own.
Right, right. Because you had someone on earlier, and they mentioned the book Good Bugs, Bad Bugs.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't in that book.
Okay.
No. And then I have also the neon green bugs. Do you know what those are? They're real, I mean, they like, yeah, glow in the dark.
Yeah, almost. How big are they?
About the size of the end of your little finger.
Oh, that sounds like it's a little early for Japanese beetles.
Emerald ash borer.
Oh, please don't even mention that.
Oh, please.
That. again, I would think if...
Phil is going to have an answer to that.
Yeah, go to an entomologist. With us being horticulturists, insects are kind of peripheral.
Insects are, yeah.
I know what they are.
Yeah. Phil's going to know.
Okay, thank you so much again for your program.
All right, thank you very much for calling, Pat. Appreciate the call. And thanks for listening, too, as a matter of fact.
There's a potential haiku, though, in the little red and the larger green emerald. I don't know. I think she missed an opportunity there. That's my thought.
All right, let's go to Ruth in Eagle River. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I have a question about, I wanted to try to grow a mango plant.
Yeah?
And I, after we ate the mangoes, we dried it out, and then we took off the outer thing, and then there was just these seeds, and I put them in a cup of water, and the water turned blackish, oily-like, and I poured the water off several times, and I was kind of curious about what that black stuff was, and what do I do now? Do I just plant the seeds, or I don't know what to do, but, and then when it, if it does start to grow and everything, how big will it be, and will I be able to have it like a house plant or something?
Well, you've stumped me on that one. I don't know. Michael,
I'll
have to help me out.
I'll just
one.
Have to do some generalizations, because growing a mango is something that I've never done. When you are going to be growing seeds, they're going to need oxygen as well as moisture to grow. And if you just put them in water, there's a good possibility they can drown and you'll kill the seed. Maybe that's what happened in your case. So I don't even know if they'll get to germinate. Another thing that needs to be done with seeds is sometimes they may need to be scratched to allow moisture to get in, or they need some sort of stratification, some sort of temperature or moisture regime to trigger germination. And what that is for mangoes, I don't know.
Okay.
There can be references out there. I know in my office I have a book that pretty much lists the way to propagate most any plant, or what they need, what the requirements are for propagating. Also, the internet, if you can weed through all the information that's out there, you might be able to find somebody who's done this experiment at home to give you some advice on how to do it. As for once you do with that plant, once you get success, you are going to be treating it like a house plant, but I don't know if you'll ever get fruit off of it or if it's going to be successful for growing indoors. They haven't been trained to do that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Said, all right. Thanks.
I thought she said mangle. I thought she was talking about the swollen hypocotyl of the Echina podiaceae.
No.
Oh, okay. It's the mangle. Wow. I hadn't. That's going to be a challenge. Yeah. Not the right. Wisconsin is going to be a tough sell for that one, yeah.
Well, you know, we've heard from Banker Joe, and we've heard from Banker Joe's daughter,
and
Sarah.
Banker Joe's son?
No, this is Banker Joe's dog, Stella.
Okay, I just have to say, this is when the show goes to the dogs. So.
And here's his haiku. Onions and carrots. How about we make nice stew? Warm, tasty, brothy. And there you have it. Banker Joe's got a talented family, I'll tell you that.
I immediately captured the mental image. You know, this is the beauty, the mystery of the haiku, that you capture the mango. You know, the issue here is the image.
Right? I was expecting the dog to be talking about chipmunk stew.
Well, we might yet get one of those. Our guest today on Garden Talk, Jim Nienhuis, UW-Madison Professor of Horticulture, Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Mike Maddox and Jim Nienhuis, ready to answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Or email at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Jerry in Green Bay next. Ooh, cool. Jerry, hello.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question about blossom end rot.
Okay.
I've had that last year with my tomatoes and my peppers, and I was just wondering what is the best way to get more, because I know it's a lack of calcium in the soil.
Well, also yeah, a watering issue.
Yeah, it's very likely. It's the only time I've seen blossom end rot. You know, it's very common in the greenhouse when you're trying to grow, you know, when I have to grow plants for seeds, especially with tomatoes and peppers. You're absolutely right, Jerry. It's all about calcium. It's a physiological disease. The way to avoid this is to regulate water so that you don't get peaks and valleys. So the way to regulate this, Jerry, is to mulch. That would be my advice. What do you think, Michael?
I agree. A lot of times people come in with these calcium sprays that they bought to put on it, and it may not be a lack of calcium. It's just the irregularity with your watering and not having enough moisture to bring it up to the developing fruit. Usually it forms with the first fruit, and then after that one's gone, the subsequent ones will be fine. But if you do find your water regularly, and you still have problems, then you might want to do a soil test for calcium, just to double check. But otherwise, it's not usually a lack of calcium. It's your watering.
Yeah. The watering.
Mulch.
No
mulch
water for 1 week and an inch the next, and no water the next week, an inch the next.
That's
you need an inch a week.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
I try to keep up on it, and like you were talking about breeding earlier, I like to mess around with my tomatoes. And
oh, you've been doing some selfing?
I had a couple of Roma plants, which I love, and you know, that tends to affect the...
Did I send you any of the seed of the famous 1x10 Roma?
No.
Are you an Italian person?
No, but I love Italian food, and I've actually spent a little bit of time over in Italy.
Okay, well, listen, I'll make a special. Well, no, it's a little bit late in the season now to send you someone. Listen, next trip down to Madison, I will promise you, come down in August. I'll give you a half a bushel basket full of 1x10s, and you can make some sauce out of it. And then you think of this, Jerry. You can save the seed. All right?
Awesome. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. There you have it. Come in August. Roger in Sauk County, your turn. Hi, Roger.
Hi. I have a comment on mulching, and then I have a haiku.
All right.
Oh, right. A mulching haiku. A mulching haiku?
No, the haiku, I'll get to in a second. It's inspired by your words, Jim.
Bless you.
In the great wisdom of Ruth Stout, the organic garden writer and book writer from many years ago, if you have weeds in your mulch isn't deep enough. and I do, part of that is true because seeds need two things to germinate. One, they need enough soil to seed contact, which doesn't always have to be soil, and they also need a little bit of light. So if your mulch is deep enough, when they're high in the mulch, they don't have enough soil to seed contact, and when they get deeper, they don't have enough light. And of course, oats germinate easily in a more airy thing. So if you mess up the oats that are germinated from straw, most other stuff won't get germinating. And now my haiku, Jim.
Bless you, Roger. I'm writing it down.
This is almost your exact words from just 10 minutes ago. I have one question for a haiku. Is a dramatic pause allowed in the middle of one line?
Sure.
Roger, I permit a lot of flexibility in my haikus.
Here it is, and it's clean.
Okay.
The breeding process. My first lady tomato. Get involved. It's fun.
Get involved. It's
fun. It's get involved.
Get involved. It's fun. Yeah,
the breeding process. My first lady tomato, get involved. It's fun. That nails it, Roger. That really nails it.
Thanks, Roger.
That's what it's all about.
Thank you so much.
You know, I will say that I was exaggerating a little bit earlier, but I don't have my mulch 10 or 12 feet deep. But I will say I probably have it 8 to 10, maybe 12. There are probably spots where it is at least a foot deep, and this is second year leaf, leaf mulch. And last year, I had no weeds, and the year before in that garden plot, I was just inundated with this portulaca, which was growling. I'd never seen a weed that would growl. I mean, as I walked by, that plant was after me. And the portulaca was just completely out of control. And that of 8 to 12 inches of that leaf, of that second generation leaf mulch, that solved it for me. I think I'm with Roger all the way. And he's a great poet also.
And someone else emailed to say, what's the difference between straw and hay?
Horses eat hay. They bed in straw.
Yeah. Well, straw is going to be something
so
like...
So one is an input item, one is kind of an output item. Yeah, okay. All right, you got it and you nailed it.
Yeah, that should be something that I think everyone should know, but for the life of me, the better description...
Well, hay is usually the plants are alfalfa.
The alfalfa where the straw is going to be the chafing of...
Oats. And could be stems. Wheat, I suppose.
And it's straws, dried stems, right?
It's dried stems, yeah. There you have... Well, but so is hay. Hay can be dried stems, too.
I know from the baling point of view, hay is a lot heavier than straw.
because there are leaves
in farm as well.
Yeah,
there are leaves in there. There are no leaves in straw, and there are leaves in hay.
For all the years of baling hay in high school, I try not to think about it now.
Oh, it was fun. You know it.
I'll show you the scars.
Frank and Cedarburg, hi.
Hi. I have a suggestion about bales of straw.
Yeah.
I used to grow tomatoes in a straw bale, and I often wondered why it wasn't getting any weeds out of it. So I came to the conclusion that if I watered a bale of straw, maybe I could pre-germinate the seed that was inside of it. So that's what happened. I just tore it apart and never had any problems with straw. So this might be a good idea instead of spreading weed seed around, which I consider a mess anyways with straw. So that would take care of it.
Boy, where would you get the nitrogen though? To you need some NPK, or am I capturing a mental image here of tomato plants growing out of a straw bale?
Great. I think,
is that what you're doing?
You know, that's what I did.
Yeah, that's the one thing we have to we haven't talked about with mulch is that it will tie up, especially the often most limiting element is going to be nitrogen. So you're going to have to apply some chicken poop compost or some...
It smells.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, but it's a nice source of nitrogen, or nice organic source of nitrogen. Or you can just buy 20-20-20, which is what we do.
I had a year... This is years ago. I moved to a place, and there I had my garden planted right where there had been a chicken coop for like 30 years.
Oh, wow.
My plants, I mean, it was just like shoot up. They shot up. Oh, man, all the nitrogen sitting in that soil was absolutely amazing.
You could have mined it, probably.
Oh, man. Thanks, Frank. Joya in Fitchburg, we'll go to you. Hi, Joya.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I got two suggestions for the one with rabbits and coyote, chipmunk.
Yeah.
She can try, besides the coyote urine, she can try also the kind paper, which is very cheap, inexpensive.
What kind of paper?
Cayenne paper.
Oh, cayenne pepper.
Oh, cayenne pepper. Oh, okay, gotcha.
Oh, see?
Okay.
Right,
see?
And the rabbits
Joanne,
and the chipmunks will like it.
Okay.
So that's how over the last 2 years I've saved my tulips like that.
Oh, wonderful.
So that may work. And
does
the
that work
lady
with...
will go into mango. First of all, if she is in the Midwest, it's very, very hard. I know somebody in Minneapolis, St. Paul, is growing a mango tree, but they have to bring it every fall inside.
Yeah.
Because the mangoes are very sensitive to frost.
Oh, yeah, you got to haul them in inside.
Right. And then you cannot take it out before April.
Mm-hmm.
And have to have a constant sunlight in the winter. Also, that's another problem here.
Yeah.
In the, January, February.
Got to have grow lights of some sort.
You know, really, when you think of all the bother of trying to grow a mango, isn't it cheaper to just buy an airline ticket, go down to Mexico or the Caribbean, Cancun, you could come with me to Central America, and you could have mangoes right down there, right off the... the giant trees. I would suggest just travel.
Well, I
scratch the seeds, and the dark waters what she got on the seed is from the iron of the mango seeds.
The iron.
Iron of the mango seeds, but she has to scratch, and then it takes quite a few weeks to grow the roots of it. Once the root grows, she has to put in the pot in the sunny spot, right humidity, right temperature, all that thing, and then she can put it outside in the summer, but as soon as the Labor Day hits and temperature goes down, she has to bring it in the inside.
Anyone ever in the entire history of the Midwest ever harvested a delicious mango from their indoor mango tree? Is there any possibility of this occurring?
I'm thinking you just talked her out of it.
Yeah.
Having to grow one.
Yeah. I would say, listen, right now, I would say for under $300, we could do the round trip to Cancun, probably throw in a hotel, right, and a rental car. I think it's a much better deal.
All right. Oh, boy. Joya, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate all your input there. Jim Nianos, UW-Madison Professor of Horticulture, our Vicar of Vegetables, Gardening Haiku Poet, and Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Our guests here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Jim Nianos, UW-Madison Professor of Horticulture and distinguished haiku poet.
Oh, bless you.
And Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, Director of Education at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville. And here to answer your questions, give us a call at 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org. We get an email from Kathy in Madison. They have tons of pine needles all over their big backyard. Are they a good mulch? I'm wondering especially about using them around strawberries and wildflowers. Thanks for your answer.
Doesn't it cause a little acidity to the soil, pine needles?
They are.
I do use them as a mulch, but I mix them with my favorite, you guessed it,
leaf
mulch. And then I don't have a problem. But I think pine needles alone probably would cause some acidity to the soil.
I would agree to the point where I've noticed, like, underneath pine trees, the consistency of the soil is such where, you know, I'm not super thrilled with it. I would use it as a mulch. I would mix it, as Jim said. I'm not super concerned about the acidity because our pH in our soils in this area tend to be a little high. So I think it's just going to be negated. But I would mix it, but I would use it.
Anything you can mix with leaf mulch is going to work, really.
Yeah.
Including okay. My brother-in-law.
Arlene in Clintonville, on to you. Hi, Arlene.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question for the fellas that I have a really nice growing clematis.
Wow.
But last year it had very, very few blossoms on, and it's growing really good this year, but I've been putting Miracle-Gro Boom Booster plant food on it. Is there anything else that I can do to get some blossoms on it?
Are you pruning it at all?
I pruned it. I didn't cut it way down or anything. I mostly cut off the dead branches in the springtime that I think.
Why didn't it produce fruit last year? What did you?
Flowers.
What was the variety? Let's find out.
Oh, gee,
what's the cultivar?
Yeah.
It's just your favorite tomato.
It's clematis.
Oh, clematis.
Yeah, clematis, yeah.
Why did I think it was a tomato?
I don't know.
I'm not listening well.
No.
Okay.
With your clematis or clematis, say it however you like, there's three different varieties that can all require their own different type of pruning.
Oh.
And honestly, whenever somebody calls me with those questions, I have to look it up. I don't commit that to memory. I'm just going to give you some suggestions or some possible ideas, and we can probably troubleshoot it later. One possible improper pruning, maybe you cut the flowers off. Maybe with your fertilizer, even though you are using a bloom booster, maybe you got too much nitrogen on there somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to favor vegetative leafy growth and not the flowering. And then the other thing is, what about your light levels? Is it going to getting enough light?
It's probably a half a day's or a quarter of a day's of sunlight.
Oh.
That could not be enough. How long have you had it in that spot?
It's been in there. I think it's been in there this is the third or fourth year, and one year it just bloomed like crazy.
Yeah.
It was much smaller. and did real well. But then last year there weren't lots of growth on it.
You know, the odd thing here is that in our garden, of course, we just have a little house in Madison. Our the peonies, as you indicated, are late this year. I would have to agree. Yeah. I would think, but the clematis, my wife grows those, and those are blooming like crazy. Maybe they're just on a year by year kind of a cycle.
Well, there's different types, and without knowing the actual cultivar, it's hard to narrow it down. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking if we're going to look at the pruning, your fertilization, and light, and let's start with the easiest. Look at light first. Maybe we can come up with an answer for it. Probably nothing we're going to give you an answer to here on the show, but let's follow up through your local county office or
if you extension want to office. Yeah,
yeah, and maybe we can help you more with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't think it's light because, well, I don't know. You know. Okay. Yeah.
All right, give it a shot though. Take a look at the light situation. If it's a quarter,
that's not very short. Much.
That's yeah. Wow, that's and not... lights, dim light on my clematis. Mm. I don't know. Well, I'm sorry. I think there's an opportunity there for Arlene. But
you know, I will admit I was going to sit quietly on this, but I did come up with a haiku.
Okay, why? Oh, Michael.
What is it? I did. All right. It's been inspired from
all right.
today.
God bless you.
And it's not about Rotary Gardens. I'm sorry, the folks, but
let me write this down, Mike.
Here it goes. Jim Nienhuis.
Oh, my God.
PhD. Gives advice on WPR. Words heavy with N. PK.
Whoa.
Well, as long as we're on the haiku, Banker Joe's daughter, Anna, and by the way, he says, P.S., we're having fun passing the BlackBerry among our family in the car as we ride along.
This is one of those banks that was foreclosed on and had some difficulties. They seem to have a lot of extra time on their hands.
I'm hoping
they?
The dog's driving.
They're in the car. And here it is. This is
what's the daughter's name again?
Anna.
Anna.
There was the other was Sarah.
Okay. Oh, and we have the dog already.
Stella,
I wrote that one down.
Yeah, dog.
Stella, yeah.
This one is a pretty good one.
Okay.
Good green leaf basil.
Good green leaf basil.
Toss it in pasta and sauce.
Oh, wow. Toss it in pasta and sauce.
Yummy, good pasta.
Yummy, good pasta. Now, you'll note, Michael, in contrast to your haiku, this one creates a very favorable mental image.
I think my folks who understood mine had a mental image, but it may not have been favorable.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's you know, that pretty much nails me.
Frank and Madison, hello.
Good.
Hi,
green leaf basil.
Good. Oh. Thanks for calling.
I have a pretty good idea what that soil, the red soil insect, is. It's actually not an insect at all. It's a mite.
Oh.
And they are fairly common. I don't know a whole lot about them, but they are mites. If you do a Google search for red soil mite, you could probably find out. I think they're detritivores, but I don't know that much about
them. Is that one of those that when you actually look at it under the microscope, it looks like a Tyrannosaurus rex?
Actually, if I recall, she said it looked like a crab, so that would make sense.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
I was going to say, it's more closely related to a spider.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And then I had a quick question as well. Hopefully it's quick. I've got some seedlings I planted of prairie plants, and I potted them up, but having been such a cold spring, they're really slowly. I was wondering if there's anything I can do to make them grow a little faster so they're planting size sooner.
Wait for warm weather.
Yeah. If you wanted to do it faster yourself, that's where a greenhouse comes in handy, so you can have the warmer weather to push the growth. Otherwise, if you're just doing them in containers outdoors in the ambient air, you're at Mother Nature's mercy.
Yep.
Little there patience you there, you know.
Little patience.
Off.
Little patience will pay off. Thanks, Frank. Ann in Whitewater, your turn. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Our property includes several acres of woods.
Okay.
And for the last 5 or 6 years, we have been working so hard to get rid of the garlic mustard. We've been spraying. We've been pulling. We've really been working on it.
Yeah.
And then last fall, I made a mistake of digging up around the edge between the yard and the woods, and I planted about 500 or 600 bulbs, spring bulbs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lots of daffodils and other smaller ones. Mm-hmm. And they came up, and of course, they were beautiful. But now everywhere I dug up is just carpeted. It's just thick.
With garlic
mustard. I stirred up the garlic mustard seeds. I was just... You know, I guess I didn't think bad enough that that would happen.
Mulch.
Can you think of anything I could plant in there that would choke them out? Or
no, that's the problem with garlic mustard is it's going to dominate the area and choke out everything else. Just for the sake of the listeners out there, one of the problems with garlic mustard is it's so profuse with seeding, and those seeds get in the ground and build up. They build up what's called a seed bank. And you, what you did was you, with your control measures, you've suppressed all the growth at the top. But when you turn that soil over to do planting, you brought new seeds up to the surface. They got the light they needed to germinate, and they started to grow. And now you're back at square one. You're going to have just to begin that fight again and continue to spray them or control them as you did before until they're back under control. And you're going to need to be really careful in the future with planting.
Leaf mulch, Michael. Leaf mulch.
Well, yeah, and you're right. You're getting there. With, once you disturb the soil, cover it again with mulch again, and hopefully those seeds didn't get the light that was required that would cause them to germinate.
Yeah. Not a bad way to look at it. And thanks very much, Ann, for calling. Yeah. Roger in Sauk County, you know, we were trying to define the difference between hay and straw, and we did a sort of a half-baked job of it. hay, Roger comes through. Hay is from grass and legumes, ideally harvested just as the flowers start to bloom, so the plant stalk is less mature, protein nitrogen content high, it's good feed, lower in carbon. Straw is from mature grain plants, is exactly right, oats, wheat, barley, rye. Once the grain is mature, so the plant stem, the leaves are mature and tougher and higher in carbon and lower in protein nitrogen and used as a bedding, not for feed.
You know, I am very thankful for those dedicated listeners out there who can help us.
That's a very good answer.
Doesn't that sound like a Wikipedia kind of an answer? You know?
I don't care. Yeah. He came through for us.
He came through. Abe in Minocqua. Hello to you.
Hi.
Abe.
I got a question about rhubarb.
Okay.
Rhubarb.
I have three rhubarb plants, and they're all... Oh, about 5 to 10 years old. And the oldest one, instead of making stalks like it used to make, about an inch in diameter, they're all just hundreds of stalks coming up about the size of a pencil. What can I do to reverse this?
Abe, before we deal with that issue, I think we have to first of all define, in your opinion, Abe, is rhubarb... This is a philosophical question, Michael. Is rhubarb a fruit or a vegetable, in your opinion?
It's a fruit. It's like a fruit.
We're getting votes across the table here of
but
fruit.
But it's probably considered a vegetable. But
what
it's
do you
a
think,
fruit.
Mike?
I think it's a vegetable.
Abe, now we can answer the question, because if it were a fruit question, I don't think we could do it. I think what's happening, Abe, is that, you know, what you want to do, if you want to have the larger stalks, I mean, it's all about competition, right? So what you want to do is probably just cut that plant up, take those tubers, spread them out, and replant them, and you'll get bigger, thicker, a little fertilizer,
yeah.
Little 20-20-20, a little cow manure.
NPK.
And don't forget some leaf mulch around the outside. And then we'll be able to, then you'll get some big, thick rhubarb vegetables. What do you think, Michael? Have I nailed that one or not?
I think that sounds like sound advice.
Okay.
That sounds reasonable to me, too.
All right, good. Thanks, Abe. Thanks for calling. And let's see. Rick and Bonduelle, I think it's your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I got a drooping hydrangeas. I guess that's how you pronounce it.
Okay.
The big bald flower.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's an old flower, and I trim it down in the fall last year. I baked it out with tomato cages and wrapped it up with a twine, and the sucker still
drooped
all over the place. Can you trim that thing in the middle of the season, or what can I do to...
It sure sounds like you have one of the Annabelle-type hydrangeas, one of the big...
Big white.
Yeah, big white. They're beautiful. The nice old-fashioned ones. One of the big complaints against them is they do get a little floppy, like what you've described. The flower is just so large, those stems can't support it.
Right.
You can always, with these plants like this one, try to experiment with doing a cutting back of it, like now. And I wouldn't do it all. I would experiment with this. Try cutting the stems back to half and see if those will produce new flower buds for this year. Otherwise, what I do with mine is I just really focus on staking it up. Tomato cages may not be strong enough, but maybe coming in with a combination of some T-bars driven in around the plant and some wire to make like a super duper tomato cage around it. That could work to give it support. But yeah, I think you're... problem is shared by many, and I'm sure callers today or in the future can call in with suggestions on how they've dealt with this problem.
Yeah.
One other thing, somewhere on a garden show, I heard that if you change the chemical of the soil, you can change the color of...
Not with those. Some
because
of the,
they're the old type?
Yeah, there's the big leaf type, the macrophylla. They're not cold hardy for our area for the flower blooms. Except for some of the new cultivars, what are the names? Endless Summer is a new one that's come out where if you change the pH, it'll change from blue to pink, etc.
Right.
And that one will do it. But otherwise, when you look at our panicle hydrangeas and our arborescence, the mophead, like what you're talking about, those will stay white, or they'll be shades of something, but it won't be affected by pH.
There's so many opportunities, though, in this question for a haiku. You know, the change in the color, the pH, the drooping, wilting hydrangea. I just can't see that you wouldn't take an opportunity there, Rick, to create a haiku from this dilemma.
Well, maybe I'll think about
okay.
it.
Thank you. I look
you
forward
back.
To that.
All right. I won't require haiku.
All right. On to Scott and Eau Claire. Hi, Scott.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I recently saw a guy's asparagus bed, and he had a layer of about an eighth of an inch of salt, and it was absolutely weed-free, and the asparagus looked great. And I'm shocked. I looked up asparagus. It cultivated in the Mediterranean, salt, hardy, and I'm thinking you guys are going to tell me why would anybody poison the soil, but I'm really thinking of doing it.
Well, it's definitely a poisoning of the soil. There's no doubt about that. It's an old-time recipe for
controlling weeds
in asparagus.
And the alternative is? Leaf mulch.
Yeah. I'm you're right. It is an old-time remedy, and it works, though we don't use it as an official UW Extension recommendation. I think the difference is salt is going to suck the moisture out of the weeds, but the asparagus is going to be a little more tolerant to it. The problem is when you put salt on the soil, it destroys soil structure.
And it's going to create high blood pressure all around. Really. really. Let's avoid this.
I am not giving it as an official recommendation, though it works for some people.
Mulch.
Leaf mulch. If there isn't a haiku in that, I don't know where there would be one.
I would go with I would not use the salt myself.
Okay. No, please don't.
Let's go to Amy in Chaseburg. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I planted, my husband did, but planted a blackberry bed about a month ago, and we mixed, fertilizer, Combinor, with our clay soil. Oh. And some of them are starting to wake up, but we have some that are still just look like sticks, and they're starting to dry out at the top. Mm.
I don't know. I don't have a good answer to this.
I have a couple different things coming to mind. You said clay soil mixed
but she
with
fertilized it, though.
Well, she amended it, but it may not have all kicked in right yet.
Oh yeah, that's good. It could be tied up.
And I'm guessing you got these in as bare root.
Yep.
It could just be an issue with the quality of the bare root stock coming in. I know I've planted some bare root things this year, not blackberries, but hydrangeas, actually. And one of them has sat in the ground for a month and a half and has finally started to put leaves on. So when you get the bare root stuff in, it may be a little delayed. Or,
okay.
You're digging a plant up, roots, from the ground. It can be a little traumatic, and not everything is going to survive that. And I'm not going to fault the grower on that one at all. That's just the chance you take when you're buying things bare root.
Don't you think, Michael, that by next year, she's going to look out there and find a giant blackberry patch that's probably going to recover? It's probably going to take a season to sort of recover.
Give it time to establish.
Yeah, give it a year.
Amy, patience.
Okay.
Patience.
All right. Thanks, Amy. Jim and Madison, hello to you. Jim, are you there?
That was me calling myself, probably.
No, we lost Jim there, I think. Okay. Marie in Richland Center. Hi.
Good morning. I guess it's afternoon now. Yes, I have two questions. One, I have a rosemary plant. I got it at Christmas time, and it started getting mold on it. And I washed it, and I did everything I could have to Finally today, I washed it with a mild bleach water, took it out of the plant, out of the pot, separated it into three.
Did you plant it? Marie, was this inside the plant? Was this a house plant?
She got it for Christmas.
Christmas. Okay.
Christmas, but
that's an indoor plant in Wisconsin.
For a year, for a month, and it's still.
Hey, just put it outside, and that plant is going to recover miraculously.
It will.
Yes.
It's been outdoors, and it keeps dying all the time. Finally, it had five plants in it, and one is totally dead.
It's so probably still mad at you for the bleach.
I took the others out and planted them in the ground.
Yeah, the bleach thing could probably be. Yeah. There could be some anger there by the plant.
Yeah. Rosemary, I'm trying to think how we're doing it with our Herb Society. We're pretty much treating it as an annual for the outdoors. Indoors, if you're going to move it inside through the winter, it's going to need a lot of light, but still a lot of drainage. You don't want to overwater them. So I'm wondering, since you've got it in as a gift, if what it's potted in right now is...
No, I took it out of the pot this morning, and I planted it in the ground.
Oh, this morning?
Well, that hasn't had time to do anything then.
Marie, I think the same advice that we just gave to Amy would be for some patience here, and you will find that your rosemary will recover.
Would be my
prediction. Now, the rosemary that's dead is not going to...
Recover.
That's not going to recover.
That is dead.
That does... there's no... We can't even get into the theological aspects of that. But I will say that there will be some possibilities that your rosemary, it's going to recover. That's what's going to happen. And you'll have rosemary at the end of the season.
Okay.
And you make some fine Italian dishes.
Around the universities in Madison, they have purple, deep purple plants. They're maybe like a little bush or something. And they are just beautiful. What are they?
Right along University
Avenue. Nine Bark.
Pardon?
I think it was a type of nine bark, one of the cultivars of... Nine bark, yeah. Maybe.
That's what it's called, nine, N-I-N-E?
Correct. And it's called that because the bark is exfoliating, and when it curls, it forms these little nines, like the number nine.
Oh, cool.
There are several different cultivars, if we're talking the same plant. Diablo was the big one that came out a couple years ago, but now, what are their names? Center Glow, Autumn Wine, they have...
Shouldn't
like,
Diablo have been little sixes?
Well, if you turn it upside down.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay.
And I actually have a couple in my yard, and I've been a big fan of them, too. The Diablo gets some powdery mildew on it. Some of the newer cultivars, they don't get as big as Diablo.
Do they overwinter?
Yes, they should.
Well, they don't here because they get planted and pulled out and...
Well, yeah, around the university. If you put them in your yard and leave them in your yard and give them the TLC they need, they should do fine. Check your local garden centers for the varieties that are available, but it's called Nine Bark. There's also a yellow, a chartreuse one out there, too, might be interested in.
Yep, there are. And thank you very much for calling. Well, here we are. We have the fifth of haiku.
From the Banker. From the Banker family.
Banker Joe's son, Joey, who is 8 years old.
Joey, okay,
and I've got a haiku in response to his haiku.
Does it start with good green leaf basil?
No, this is okay. It's just he's 8 years old here, okay. Though. So it says a little haiku for all of you to enjoy about a garden.
A little haiku for all to enjoy.
All of you to enjoy.
All of you to enjoy. Let's see that does that break the 575?
Yeah, no, no.
Okay,
no,
that's okay. All of you to enjoy.
About a garden, and here's mine.
Right.
A little program for all of you to enjoy about your garden. And that's what this is, and I want to thank you both very much for being with us today. Our guest, Jim Neonos, Professor of Horticulture, Vicar of Vegetables, Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Our vicars reunite on July 17th, by the way. And we'll talk aches and pains coming up Monday. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.